Alan Shatter has written a book about his, I suppose, his exit from the senior role in Irish politics, a former Minister for Justice in the end of Kenny government who had to resign his position. The book is called Frenzy and Betrayal, The Anatomy of a Political Assassination. The title actually reminded me of that movie from about 10 years ago, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Who's the coward that you would regard as being your assassin?
Well, I think I'm going to let the readers of the book reach their own conclusions on it, because it's quite a complex story involving a range of very bizarre events and different individuals. So what I've tried to do, Matt, is tell a chronological account of events that happened, in extraordinary events that happened in the first 6 months of 2014, go back to earlier events of relevance to them, and what evolved out of them. And it was a time when I really thought I'd entered an alternative universe, in the sense that, and you'll recall it yourself because you had many people on this show who were being interviewed dealing with the false allegations that the Garda Síochána Ombuds Commission were under surveillance. I was effectively accused of covering up espionage that never happened. I was then subsequently accused of entirely ignoring the concerns that Sergeant Maurice McCabe raised. It took about 6 weeks after my resignation, the Cook report established that everything I'd been saying about the GSOC thing was in fact true. Much, I'm afraid, to the upset of both some politicians in Leinster House and some journalists who'd been pushing that story for all it was worth. It took until May of 2016 for the O'Higgins Commission to establish that I'd dealt appropriately and correctly with issues relating to Maurice McCabe. But there were a lot of other issues going on at that time. So what I've tried to do is tell the story from the inside. It's really a story of the relationship between truth and politics, the relationship between politicians and the media. It's a very symbiotic relationship.
Well, the most bizarre one was the story that emerged suddenly that there had been recordings of interviews in Garda stations over a period of nearly 20 years, which suddenly caused this enormous flurry that this is absolutely sensational. And it led to the extraordinary circumstances in which your Secretary of the Department of Justice, Brian Purcell, seemingly in the instructions of Taoiseach Enda Kenny, went and delivered a message to the serving Garda Commissioner, Martin Callanan, which was as good as saying, quit now or you'll be fired. And then that happened, and suddenly the whole issue just sort of petered out as if it wasn't actually important at all.
Well, it didn't entirely peter out. I mean, I was very much in the centre of this, and I knew nothing about these Garda recordings until the evening of a meeting in the Taoiseach's office. When we informed the Dáil of what occurred, because I was immediately accused of lying, it was assumed O'Shatter knew about this all of the time. There was the extraordinary circumstance of the Garda Commissioner sending a very detailed letter into the Department of Justice 2 weeks before his retirement, detailing the background to the recording issues, what he'd discovered, what he'd done. He'd put a stop to it when he discovered them himself, what was happening. I knew nothing about this letter until some 3 hours the following day.
Hang on, why did you not get the letter?
Because, as the book details, it disappeared into the department. It was given to the Secretary General, who passed on to the Garda section. And for 2 weeks, this letter was sitting within the department. The Garda Commissioner had
about something apparently so serious.
Yes. And the Garda Commissioner had expressly asked it to be brought to my attention. And
why didn't he do it himself? You were in a good relationship. Why didn't he just pick up the phone and tell you about this letter?
Well, he did what was the normal thing to do. He sent a very detailed letter into the Department of Justice setting out, I think my recollection is a 3 to 4 page letter, setting out the events that had occurred, asking it be brought to my attention. He was perfectly entitled to assume the Secretary General of the Department would have brought it to my attention. And as I say, this emerged, this letter emerged some hours after his retirement. And then you had the usual conspiracy theories. So we'd already had it with Maurice McCabe and the GSOC issue, where I was being accused that Shatter must have known of the letter and his lying. So we had all these extraordinary events over a period of weeks. So what this book tries to do is tell the story from the inside, what happened in politics, what the public perceptions were, how the media dealt with the issues. The media basically decided that they were taking up a prosecutorial role. They were prosecuting me with all sorts of...
No. The media weren't the ones who actually sought the resignation of Martin Callan as Garda Commissioner. That was an action of the Taoiseach of the day, Enda Kenny, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a separate issue, of course.
But wasn't it a result of a culmination of a lot of things? Martin Callan didn't go perhaps for that issue alone, but because there was so much stuff in the ether which had been dominating political discourse for quite a while.
Well, again, the book gives the inside account of what happened, and in fact the inside account of the meeting that took place in the Taoiseach's office on the evening of the visit of the Secretary-General to the Garda Commissioner. And in relation to that meeting, I mean, the only issue discussed at that meeting in practical terms was the revelation of the Garda recordings. There was a perception on the part of myself and the Taoiseach at the time that the Garda Commissioner had told no one about it. And it would only later emerge that the previous November he'd sought advice from the Attorney General's office. So this is a very complex and difficult story. But ultimately, his retirement directly related to the Garda recording issue. There was nothing else discussed that evening. Of course, there was a lot of other controversy going on in the background. And some of the listeners today will be familiar with that controversy. But a lot of what was being said about those controversies would subsequently, in the years that followed, turn out to be inaccurate. And there was a lot of fake news running at that point in time. And the title of the book, Frenzy and Betrayal, is about not just the frenzy within Leinster House in the context of what turned out to be false allegations made by a number of opposition deputies, but also the frenzy within the media, where columnists were giving opinions and being adamant about all sorts of issues and making allegations, vast majority of which at the end of the O'Higgins Commission, the Cook Commission, the Fenley Commission, turned out to be completely inaccurate.
But Alan, would you not concede that when we get to your personal position in a little while, but when it came to the Garda Commissioner, Martin Callan, that it was better that he went, because when we saw subsequently the stuff that emerged from the Charlton Tribunal in particular about the baseless allegations that he was making about Maurice McCabe, for example, that this was inappropriate behaviour on the part of a Garda Commissioner. And even after he left as Garda Commissioner and the Tribunal was looking for information, the remarkable thing about all the missing mobile phones, about all the documents that had been taken in black refuse sacks out of the Commissioner's office, you know, going and meeting John McGuinness TD in an underground car park, that sort of stuff is not the type of thing that we would have expected out of a Garda Commissioner. And in the end, Justice Charlton's report was damning of Martin Callan and was very damning of the evidence he gave to the Tribunal.
Yes, it was. But I've deliberately given a chronological account of events, because the first I learned of what I think Judge Charlton references as quote, the utterances, unquote, of the Garda Commissioner, where he had, according to the Charlton report, for entirely inappropriate conversations with members of the Dáil, and where there was revelations of what occurred when he met Deputy McGuinness. The first I knew of the detail of that was some years after my resignation, and it all emerged quite unexpectedly during the Charlton Tribunal hearings, because the original allegations made by Dave Taylor, a lot of those turned out to be completely untrue, totally discredited. But this all emerged. But what the book deliberately does is look at the chronology of events. And at the time of what was known in 2014, really the Garda Commissioner's early retirement derived from issues around the recording issue.
And
we can all have retrospective knowledge of subsequent events that perhaps justified his retirement. But what occurred at that time was quite extraordinary. And of course, you have to also recall in the context of that particular year, as emerged from the O'Higgins Commission, the Garda Commissioner was wrongly accused of being corrupt and dealing with a number of issues. And it was the conclusion of the O'Higgins Commission that the allegation of corruption, not just against the Garda Commissioner, but against other senior Gardaí, was unfounded or baseless, and there wasn't a scintilla of evidence on which it could be justified.
Okay. How long is it now since you resigned as Minister for Justice?
Oh, it's 5 years now, yeah.
Are you still as angry about it?
I'm not angry.
If you went through the trouble of writing this book, it would suggest that you are angry about it.
I think what's hugely important is the that we have a sound democracy in this country, that we make judgments on issues based on truth, not based on opinion and belief. I think if you leave me out of it for a minute, let's just come to the Geeran report for a minute. My resignation resulted from me being put under pressure as a result of a report that Mr. Geeran produced. Now, Mr. Geeran...
You better explain this. You know, I'd imagine, Alan, there's quite a lot of people listening to this...
Well, completely lost at this stage.
But who can't remember why it is that you were forced to resign.
Well, I was forced to resign for a very simple reason. There were issues that were rightly raised by Maurice McCabe. And within some of those issues, there were claims that he made which turned out to be mistaken. And some were turned out to be exaggerated. And amongst the claims that were made at the time, by the political opposition, was that I had ignored issues that Maurice McCabe raised. Mr. Sean Geeran, who's a senior counsel, was appointed by government to engage in a preliminary inquiry to identify, in the context of all the different issues that were then there, whether there were issues which required a commission of investigation. And his terms of reference required that he identify those issues. And do no other than set out, this is what should be addressed by a commission of investigation. He did something that was utterly and completely unexpected. He went beyond his terms of reference, as the Supreme Court most recently confirmed in February of this year, and he made judgment calls on some individuals. And the individual he particularly made a judgment call was on me. I never expected that I would be criticised and condemned by Mr. Geeran in the context of the inquiry he was conducting, and even less so that was possible, without him ever talking to me, telling me what his concerns were, engaging with me. 19 hours, he rightly engaged with Maurice McCabe for 19 hours. He didn't give me the courtesy of 5 minutes. Now, if we project ourselves further, his condemnation effectively was the touchstone for my resignation and for the action of the Taoiseach.
Did Taoiseach Enda Kenny ask you to resign?
Taoiseach Enda Kenny made it clear to me, he used what I would describe as the Callanan formula, that he wouldn't be able to express confidence in me. If he was asked. So, basically, my goose was cooked because of the conclusions reached by Mr.
Did you argue with Enda Kenny, the way you're outlining it now, say, I haven't had a chance to defend my name, I haven't been interviewed by this man. Did you say that to Enda Kenny?
I did, of course. I said to Enda Kenny that his conclusions are mistaken. He's never talked to me. He hasn't engaged with me. And in fact, I detail that in my resignation letter and later on in the Doyle. Now,
how do you feel about Enda Kenny subsequently? 5 years on, how do you feel about the way he dealt with that situation?
Well, you see, I think there's a separate issue, and there's an issue that hasn't been addressed yet, because this is about how we run government. This is about how no minister should be condemned without due process and fair procedures, and certainly shouldn't be condemned based on mistaken conclusions. Jump forward 2 years from May 2014 to May 2016, and the O'Higgins Commission decided effectively that all of the critique of Mr. Geeran of my conduct as a minister was entirely incorrect.
Well, in that
and
case,
that I dealt
And have you ever spoken to Enda Kenny about
and
that
and
subsequently?
Appropriately. But you see, even after the O'Higgins Commission, I'd found myself in a position where I had to take court proceedings because the commission wasn't created until 9 months after I was criticised. And those court proceedings continued all the way to the Supreme Court until February of this year, despite the mistaken conclusions and the vindication by O'Higgins. Geeran insisted in continuing from the Court of Appeal into the Supreme Court to try and justify the manner in which he conducted his inquiry and his mistaken criticisms of me. Now, he was doing this as a public function, paid by taxpayers, and he knew his report was going to be published. Now, despite all of the inquiries...
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
And despite all of the court proceedings, to this day, I don't know why Geeran went beyond his terms of reference. To this day, I don't know why he reached mistaken conclusions. And to this day, he hasn't had even the decency to apologise for the conclusions he reached.
And Enda Kenny fired you on the back of it. So have you had a conversation with Enda Kenny about this?
Oh, I had conversations with Enda Kenny.
Not just at the time, subsequently.
No. At the time, in 2014, he met with me. I explained my difficulties about what had occurred.
And he still fired you?
No, this was subsequently to him firing me. There was a pretense. He had an interest in my concerns about how Mr. Geeran conducted his inquiry.
A pretense?
But a pretense, because he took great and lengthy notes of what I had to say, but he never followed it up. I mean, it was essentially
So you're obviously disappointed in him. What about Taoiseach, the serving Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar? You have a fair cut at him a few times along the way in the book as well.
Well, as I say, people can read the book. It's a comprehensive book. Leo and I see politics differently. I saw politics in my time in Cabinet and throughout my life in Leinster House as a means of effecting change and reform and just making people's lives better.
Surely Leo Varadkar thinks that's what he's doing. What he brought in the various referenda for example.
Well, my engagement with Leo was such that if other Cabinet colleagues who had issues that they believed needed to be addressed that affected the justice area would come in and have a chat with me. And, you know, you're all on the same team. You engage with each other. If Leo had a problem that he thought may benefit him politically, he talked to you through a megaphone, be it on radio or TV or through the media.
What's wrong with that? If he was bringing issues of public importance to public attention. For example, a lot of people feel that he was the catalyst for making sure that Maurice McCabe was really listened to.
Yeah, well, you see, that's untrue. And that was a false narrative that he deliberately used to generate applause and attract attention. Because...
Which isn't that what all politicians do?
You know, do you know what you do, really, if you're a serious politician? You actually look at how can I address issues that need to be addressed to either resolve problems or improve people's lives or correct legislation that's defective and making people's lives
difficult.
Would
you say that the likes of Mick Wallace and Claire Daly have been affected in that way, which is why they've been elected to the European Parliament?
I'm not going to address issues of public perception based on media reportage. You asked me about Leo Varadkar. At a time when he made a speech saying that Maurice McCabe had effectively been ignored and implied he'd been ignored by me and the Garda Commissioner on the penalty points and ticket charge issue. As I detail in the book, he knew that to be untrue. That was a good media line to attract attention. He knew it to be untrue, quite simply, because he made that speech in March of 2014. And before he'd made that speech, we had already ensured that his department knew of our engagement with Maurice McCabe. Something called the O'Mahony Report, investigating the allegations of ticket charge difficulties, had been published a year earlier. Substantial reform had been introduced. Ironically, in the same speech, he recognised the benefit of the reform because I had some reservations about some issues not being fully addressed in the O'Mahony Report. I referred it to the Garda Inspectorate. And when Leo had made that speech, we'd already made a cabinet decision to implement further reform. So the speech was quite misleading, but it did fit into a popular narrative and a narrative that many members of the media had been propagating for some time.
Finally, you lost your seat in the 2016 general election.
Yeah.
Do you ever intend going back into politics?
Matt, I have a difficulty. My difficulty is that I see issues that haven't been addressed as part of my reforming agenda that if I'd stayed in justice would have been long ago implemented. And I believe that there's a lot that needs to be done, frankly, that my former colleagues in government aren't doing. I go walking in my constituency and I can't be let out without someone asking me, will I run again? The truthful answer is I've made no definitive decisions about that. But the unfortunate...
Hardly, after what you say about Leo Varadkar, he's hardly likely to welcome you back as next Minister for Justice,
Is
he?
No, well, I took a view that that there's a certain level of decency that's necessary in politics. Now, Fine Gael, I always believed, had that level of decency. And I think truth about issues is hugely important. And I'm afraid my disillusionment with the current leadership of Fine Gael was such that after being a member of Fine Gael for in excess of 38 years, in the spring of 2018, I did not renew my membership. So I'm not currently a member of the Fine Gael party, but there are a lot of fantastic people in the Fine Gael party. It has a wonderful membership. And I hope they read this book, because I think this book gives an insight into some of what's wrong internally with Fine Gael.
I have to leave it there. We're way over time. Alan Shatter, thank you very much. The book is Frenzy and Betrayal.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.